Global Connections Television is a privately funded, independently produced program. The opinions expressed on Global Connections are solely those of the moderator and his guests. We invite you to go to the website at www.globalconnectionstelevision.com to view previous shows. If you are involved with a PBS or community access television station or an educational institution that has an intra-campus television hookup or perhaps a podcast or just a computer and would like to share the programs, please feel free to do so. Global Connections is provided at no cost to help people in the U.S. and worldwide better understand how international issues impact our lives.
Here today is Global Connections program. I'm Bill Miller. Today, we're going to be taking a look at an international institution that is extremely important, not only in Europe, but in other parts of the world, and that is NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. My guest today is an expert on this organization. Mr. Rolf Schwartz has served as political advisor for the Middle East and Africa at NATO headquarters and as a professor of the NATO Defense College. He currently is senior advisor at the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, commonly called OECD. He's also the author of several articles and books, notably a book on state building and post-conflict peace building, as well as articles on sustainable development and the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals financing. His most recent book is NATO and the Middle East in Search of a Strategy. Mr. Rolf Schwartz, welcome to today's Global Connections program.
Thank you very much, Bill. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate you being with me today. Thank you. Before we get into it, let's talk a little bit about NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. Just very briefly, when was it formed? Why was it formed? And how many members did it have at the beginning? And how many members does it have now?
Yes. NATO was formed in 1949, and it was initially formed, of course, as an answer to the Warsaw Pact and to fight in the Cold War, to come up with that Western unity during the Cold War, a close U.S.-European alliance. Today, it has grown considerably beyond the initial members. It is now 30 members. It has what one can term reinvented itself. The organization has taken on global responsibilities in many parts of the world. And it is today still present in the North Atlantic area, but it is and has the self ambition also to contribute to go towards global peace and security within and under the UN Charter. So it has grown tremendously. It has developed particular one aspect, which is crucial, which also outlined in the book, is that notion of a security community. Its members feeling part of being a community and trying to advance regional security, but also global security.
It's a very important organization, and we're going to be talking about why it is and what can be done to strengthen it. But if our viewers are interested, they can go to the website at www.nato.int for more information. Well, let's dive into your book right now and talk about NATO and the Middle East in Search of a Strategy. And I think you have a copy of the book that you can show. Yes, you did. Very good. Very good. Why did you write this particular book at this particular point in time?
Yes. I've been interested in a long time in the Middle East region, and NATO as an organization and as an alliance has grown one particular aspect, which is very interesting for international relations, which is this notion of having developed a security community about its members. And the security community is described as having peaceful relation among members, shared values, the feeling of belonging to the same community, having a common purpose, sort of being a family. And it is interesting to see that NATO has tried to engage with the Middle East region, which is a neighboring region to NATO, south of it, south of the Mediterranean. And it has employed different tools in doing so. Unfortunately, there is still a strategy needed to really embrace this and to really export that community spirit, that security community spirit to the Middle East. So instead or focus more on the hard topics of security, it is important to also tackle the root causes of the insecurities in the Middle East. And I think that's what I want to highlight in the book is, yes, a good step has been taken by working with that important world region, the Middle East, but more is needed to make it really meaningful and so that also stability is exported.
It's certainly a very vital area of the world, no doubt about that. Now, NATO, as with any organization, be it the United Nations or whatever, has a toolkit, and you have soft tools and hard tools. What are a couple of examples of a soft tool approach to dealing with a problem, and then maybe some examples of hard tools that you might use?
Yes, you're absolutely right. NATO uses a whole toolkit of elements. One of them is partnership. That is the notion of having a political dialogue, of having practical collaboration. NATO, for example, has launched two specific initiatives with countries of the region called the Mediterranean Dialogue, bringing together Arab countries, but also Israel. And then it has another partnership initiative called the Istanbul Cooperation Initiative. The more hard tools NATO has at its disposal are crisis management and military partnerships. NATO has also employed these in Afghanistan, in Libya, military operations. As I show in the book, these outside interventions, they take place in a context of insecurity, and they have often advanced these insecurities rather than solved them. So often NATO has fought more with the symptoms of insecurity in that region rather than really tackling the root causes of insecurity in the Middle East. And so one of the tools which could work better is, of course, that partnership tool, that cultural diplomacy, which can advance much more that common feeling also with these partners in the neighboring region.
And you mentioned the root causes, which is extremely important. And of course, in any movement, for example, we see migrants all around the world are trying to move from one country to another. And so often we are dealing with the symptoms and not the root causes. What do you see as some of the root causes or the challenges in the Middle East that we need to address?
One of the key root causes is weak and fragile statehoods in many parts of the Middle East. That means that institutions need to be strengthened. And for example, NATO's partnership, if focused more on prevention rather than intervention, can help strengthen these institutions. In that sense, I use the term strategy in search of a strategy also. On the one hand, NATO has embraced the willingness to work with that region, but has only half-heartedly done so. More of a push from its members towards that in investing in that region, in building these institutions which helped to bring that stability abroad, and using less military approaches could be very useful. The second element, I think, of doing so could be focusing much more on conflict prevention rather than in trying to solve or fixing conflicts once they have broken out already.
That's extremely important. Once the fighting starts, it's very difficult to stop the fighting. It's easy to start a war, very difficult to stop a war. Well, you're watching Global Connections Television, which is a privately funded, independently produced program. The opinions expressed on Global Connections are solely those of the moderator and his guest. We'd invite our viewers to go to our website at www.globalconnectionstelevision.com to view previous programs. Also, if you're involved with a PBS or community access television station, or perhaps an educational institution that has an intra-campus television hookup, or you just have a podcast, or you just have a computer, and you like our shows and you would like to share them, please feel free to do so. Global Connections Television is provided at no cost as a public service to help us better understand international issues and how they impact our lives. Today, we're taking a look at a very important institution, and that is NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. My guest today is an expert on this topic. Mr. Rolf Schwartz has served as political advisor for the Middle East and Africa at NATO headquarters and as a professor of the NATO Defense College. He currently is senior advisor at the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. His most recent book is titled NATO and the Middle East in Search of a Strategy. Before we get back into NATO, let's just mention, I don't want to get too far off track here, but the OECD, just very briefly, in a minute or so, what exactly is the OECD?
So the OECD was founded after the Second World War and is the organization which was mandated to administer the U.S. Marshall Aid to Europe. In a sense, one can say that the OECD is the sister organization to NATO. On the one hand, you have the security aspects of reconstruction and stability. On the other, you have the economic aspects. So OECD is about bringing about that like-mindedness about economic policies, social policies. It grew out of the Cold War. Today, it has its membership is beyond Europe as well. It has members from all across the globe. But there's a parallel between the two organizations, and it's perhaps no coincidence that even in the founding treaty of NATO, economic collaboration is mentioned. So in a sense, we see also that economic collaboration and aligning economic policies is crucial to contributing to not just well-being, but also stability.
It's another very important organization. And our viewers, if they'd like more information, can go to www.oecd.org to get more information on that vital institution. Now, if we can shift back to NATO here, I digress a little from time to time on the program, but let's go to NATO in the Middle East. We see what the horrific situation is going on right now in Gaza with the terrible suffering that's going on with the Palestinians, with the Israelis. What can NATO, is there a vital role for NATO in helping to bring peace and stability to that area?
So my book was written before these events, these terrible events of the 7th October and the ongoing fighting in Gaza occurred. So in a sense, I provide a historical perspective to it. NATO has always stressed that it has no specific role in the Middle East peace process. But if you look at the history of NATO, in particular in recent years, NATO Secretary Generals have stressed that that could change. And that could change in according to if there are, and the Secretary Generals have usually referred to this as three ifs. If there is a comprehensive peace agreement, if there is the consent of the parties, and if there is a United Nations mandate. Now, of course, today we are far away from these conditions. And at the same time, we all know that the time will come once the ongoing fighting will end, and a more lasting post-conflict situation needs to be established. And it's perhaps important to mention, Bill, here that already some 15 years ago, the idea of NATO peacekeepers in the West Bank at the time emerged. And while it was then discarded, nothing, in my view, would exclude a reflection about conceiving NATO as a peacekeeper in the Middle East. Now, again, I mean, in the book, I historically trace some of these elements. It's not a program for action, but I simply show that over the years and its partnership, NATO has developed excellent relationship with Israel, with neighboring Egypt, with Jordan. And if one looks at a very recent opinion poll, for example, coming out of Israel, is that most Israelis today believe that once the fighting has ended in Gaza, that an international force is needed to monitor and enforce peace. So again, as international policymakers will be thinking about the day after, I think there is merit in thinking about whether an international peacekeeping force, perhaps composed of some NATO members, could be one of the options which are considered as we think about the day after the fighting stops.
We really have to start planning for that. Hopefully it's sooner than later. And it's not going to be so far down the road, but we really have to start planning for that. The situation in the Middle East is it's like a powder keg. It can go off, it has gone off, and it could certainly go off in the future, without a doubt. I was curious, when you were talking about being invited, you'd have to have a United Nations, I guess, Security Council mandate to get involved or whatever, one of the three ifs. How do you interact with the United Nations? Your goals are running parallel with those of UN peacekeeping and UN peace building. How do you interface with the United Nations?
So United Nations peacekeeping have taken on different forms, and there have been often also close collaboration between NATO and UN peacekeeping, for example, in Afghanistan, but also in Bosnia, in Kosovo. The two organizations have respective strengths and weaknesses. Often it has taken on the form of NATO taking on more of the hardcore capabilities for UN peacekeeping. There is one NATO spokesperson who once characterized the arrangement as one where NATO is the provider of sort of the taxi company, providing the troops, where the UN is providing the political chapeau and the political responsibility. I think what is crucial is the United Nations has a lot of legitimacy and it's a global body. And of course, if there is the possibility where sort of respective strength can be brought in, I think then it's a win-win situation. And there have been cases where there have been United Nations peacekeeping missions, but where majority or a large part of the troops contributed come from NATO nations. So that's one of these examples which exist. And which I think can help as the international community thinks about also solutions to ongoing problems and challenges.
Exactly. And now NATO has been very involved in a variety of operations. One that comes to mind is the Balkans back in the mid-90s. What is the current status of the Balkans with Kosovo and Bosnia today and the role of NATO in that area?
Yes. So you're absolutely right, Bill. This was one of the historic moments in NATO also when it started embracing sort of projecting stability beyond its borders in the 1990s. And today NATO is still engaged it has a mission in Kosovo with troops stationed there and with maintaining stability there. The other example you mentioned, Bosnia and Herzegovina, is an example of actually a shared arrangement similar to the one you mentioned between the United Nations and NATO. In this case, in Bosnia and Herzegovina, the arrangement is between NATO and the European Union. So the peacekeeping and the monitoring is being done by the European Union. But of course, when we look at the region of the Western Balkans, NATO has embraced another tool, and it has given the possibility of these members the opportunity also of becoming members of the alliance. And for example, Croatia today is a member of NATO. So this is another example how NATO, to link to what we said, what we discussed at the beginning of the show, is this exporting of the security community. And that can happen sort of when others are brought into that community and when they start sharing the same values and when they have set up their institutions in a similar and transparent way so that integration becomes possible.
Back before the Russian invasion of Ukraine, NATO, according to NATO specialists, I'm not one, but according to specialists, NATO was kind of looking to see what its future would be, what was going on, how it could strengthen itself. Some of the NATO members were a little skeptical maybe of what NATO could do. But then Joe Biden, the president of the United States, has gotten tremendous credit for helping to bring NATO together and to provide a solid front in Ukraine. Is that still the situation? Is that going to continue, do you think, even though we've got a very frenzied discussion in the United States right now as to how we should be involved in NATO and other organizations too? It's sort of an isolationist movement in this country right now, which I'll get into in just a moment. But do you see that solid support for of NATO in Ukraine at this point?
So currently, NATO allies are showing strong support to Ukraine and have made that one of their priorities. And there's strong commitment that this continues as well. In a way, one can say that NATO has sort of moved back to a focus of collective defense, a little bit one of the its original purposes. So contrary to what I describe in the book, which is more the outward perspective, the partnership perspective, the engagement of NATO with Ukraine is one where it's really a close neighbor. Ukraine has the ambition of becoming a member of NATO, and that in itself is an issue with Russia. And that openness of NATO to continue being open to new members is the merit actually of the US administration after the end of the Cold War. There is another very influential book which was written about this, calling The Opening of NATO's Doors. This was the reinvention sort of NATO after the end of the Cold War, where former adversaries were allowed to come in. And that policy has been maintained. And as it looks, it will continue to exist, that open door policy. Now, you mentioned President Joe Biden and how he has put also the glue in NATO back together, so that it really holds together as an alliance, that internal cohesion. And one of the key elements there has been burden sharing, that all members bring something to the table, and that burden sharing can also be comparable. Of course, the United States is the biggest NATO ally, but the importance is, I think, and that's where the debate is going at the moment, is that there needs to be burden sharing and that all members need to step up their commitments in terms of defense spending, but also in terms of support to Ukraine.
One of the major challenges we're confronting in the United States right now is just a plethora of misinformation and disinformation, and people who really don't understand history, or if they do understand history, they're ignoring it. For example, just the other day, Donald Trump said that he would withdraw from NATO. We know that's no big secret. He wanted to do that back when he was president. But apparently, these people who are aided by operations, media outlets, such as Fox, Newsmax, different ones like that, are putting out so much misinformation and disinformation. And they seem to have forgotten that the two major wars, the most horrific wars, were fought in Europe. And NATO has been a stabilizing force. How would you present that to the American public to let them realize, or help make them realize, that NATO is critical to stability and you can't have an isolationist approach? These issues will catch up with us at some point. If Putin takes over Ukraine, it will be detrimental to not only Ukraine, but to Europe and to the United States. But how would you make that? And the hardest question in the last 60 seconds we have, how would you make that appeal to the American public and people around the world, really?
Very good question. And what I would say, Bill, is security has no borders. So one needs to tackle security comprehensively, and one cannot do it as a country alone. One needs to do this together. The second one is, security is not just security, but stability is linked to the economic aspects, to the welfare aspects, and to democratic aspects. So NATO brings together all of this. NATO is an institution where there are countries who share the same values with the United States, who want to bring forward that comprehensive notion of security, of a free world, free democracy, freedom of markets, but also the opportunity of welfare, of improving the economic lives of people. And NATO has been one of these institutions in Europe who have made that possible over decades of years, and has shown that it held this together. So in a sense, it's helping American interests, and it can further help American interests. What is needed, of course, I think, is that the organizations adjust, continues to adjust, And if there are adjustments to be needed from the opinion of, you know, the American public or American government, then I think the organization is one that has shown willingness to adjust. But I would say, in the interest of the United States, to work with like-minded partners, with like-minded allies, actually, who actually advance these same principles which are fundamental to American society: freedom, the rule of law, democracy, and economic freedom.
And all of those are under attack right this minute as we speak. That was a perfect way to wrap it up and to make us realize, or help us realize, how important NATO is and how we need peace and stability, not only in Europe, but also in other parts of the world. But Mr. Rolf Schwartz, I want to congratulate you on your recent book. It's an excellent book, and it's very timely, and we encourage everyone to get a copy of it. But I want to thank you so very much for a very interesting and a very informative program.
Thank you very much, Bill, for having me on your show.
Thank you. I'm Bill Miller. Thank you for joining us today on Global Connections Television.